हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so Sri Sutras, chapter 3, Achit Padartha Prakarana Matra, page 101. In his commentary on these words, Shankaracharya explains, here it is said that contemplation of sense objects is the root of all that is undesirable. Like, is this meant to you, while contemplating the sense of the object, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, from lust, anger. In Bhagavad Gita 4.9, this is Deep Personality also. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take in the world, but attains my eternal abode. Oh, in Bhagavad Gita 15.3.4, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, the real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this tree with a weapon of attachment. So doing, one must seek that place from which, having once gone, one never returns. So it is within the material world, because of the influence of the Gunamaya, then the living entity cannot actually understand how it's working. Where's the beginning, the end, what's it based on, all these things they can't tell. It's just the effect of the maya, right? There's always a thing, no, and why will someone think that doesn't matter? Because they're independent, right? The living entity thinks I'm independent from Krishna. So, you know, the material energy, I can deal with it and understand it however I like, because we have to be one of the positions, envy and attachment, or I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer. So I'm the controller means I know everything. I don't have knowledge, I don't know, I'm not. Therefore, then, the aspect of being in control means I want to get knowledge about that. So the more knowledge I have, the more control I have. So then the living entity is thinking that, no, because I am in control. Therefore, I can know anything. Anything that I want, I can know. But this is illusion, because they can't. So it's based on this thing of I want to be the supreme controller. I want to be the supreme, you know, I know everything and all this. So Krishna, he knows everything. He's everywhere. We're not. We're in one body. We're limited, but we say, I can understand everything. But you know, that's the foolishness. So even though it seems like it's knowledge and you're using intelligence, but the amount false ego that's involved in that whole process is very great. So it's not that, when it says objective, it's not actual, because the false ego is also involved, and that makes it, then according to the definition, subjective. In Bhagavad Gita 15.6, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, that abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by electricity. One who reaches it never returns to this material world. So, in other words, the material world is there, but there's something beyond it. And that's what has to be searched out. Now the author of the sutras will reveal the way the soul can become free from these illusions, the author says. Right? So the point was, is there is this other place, cut down the tree of this world, go to that world. Right, so now he's saying, how to become free? That's this next sutra, Sutra 28. Using the intelligence as power of discrimination, one become, one can become free from these illusions. Udvita, Udvriti, Sri Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami states the process of Jiva's liberation from illusion in Anucheda 83 as follows. Giving up the adhyasa, mistaken identity, does not take place by itself, but by the strength of acquired atparamatma. Right? So we can say is using the intelligence power of discrimination, one can become free from these illusions. But how is that? It means the intelligence is then used in connection with the Lord. So power of discrimination is what's the difference between matter and spirit. So to be able to tell that difference, that's then what you're trying to appreciate. And so it doesn't happen on its own. It's not, no, yes, of my intelligence alone, I will understand the Supreme. No, it's by using the intelligence to discriminate that here is what the Shastras are revealing, Guru-Sadhara Shastras are revealing about the Supreme. I put my intelligence there, use my intelligence to analyze and understand that. To express this, the previous examples continue. When the cloud produced from the sun is destroyed, the eye can see its own form and the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys his material covering of false ego by acquiring the paramatma, he realizes the atman, the Lord. Right? So the cloud is produced by the sun, the cloud is also removed by the sun. Right? And if the cloud is there, we can't see. We can't see the Lord, we can't see ourselves. Then when by the Lord's grace, by his mercy, he removes that cloud of ignorance, then that means now we can see the Lord, now we can see ourselves. Right? Okay. So how will that happen? There has to be something to connect that. Right? So you have to do something. Right? So then what are we doing here? We're acting in devotion and trying to please the Lord. Then the Lord reveals. That's then how it works. Right? There has to be an action, as we said before, is that you have the material energy, you have the jiva. And then, you know, some will say that time is the third factor, but no, it's not. It is an intermediary. It connects these two. But by time, the jiva connects with the material energy. Or that's on the secondary aspect of time, that he performs actions that therefore implicate him within the material energy, right? So the time is actually included with the aspect of the action itself. So action connects things. You know, it's just like action. There is a plate of, you know, something to eat, and there is myself. You know, so by action, I connect the two. Right? So it's not that it's a third separate thing. It because the other two exist on their own. And so then the time is simply bringing the existence of these two things together. And then whatever transformation will take place can happen. So the same way is that's the secondary aspect of time. So it has past, present, future. But the primary aspect of time is action in Krishna consciousness. Where the devotees perform activities related to the Lord performs activities related to the devotee. And that then happens in the present. That's the primary aspect of time. And so therefore you have to do something. So you're inquiring about karma, right? Then Krishna makes that step towards us. We've taken that step towards him. He takes that step towards us. Purport, that was Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.3. Purport by Srimad Vishwanathakura Thakura. When the ahankara, a covering on the jiva, is destroyed, one realizes Brahman. This is explained through an example. When the cloud is destroyed, our eye sees the sun in its true form. The human eye and not the eye of the owl sees the sun. Similarly, the eye of the jnani who sees some bhakti sees Brahman and not the person without bhakti. Bhaktiaham ekaya grahya. I am only achieved by bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. When a ahankar is destroyed, one realizes Brahman. Because the false ego is a covering in which we don't see, we identify ourselves with something other than what we are. As soon as you remove that false covering, then we see ourselves as we are. We see ourselves as a particle or an amsa of Krishna. And our nature is dependency, and our nature is service. And so when we see that, then we actually see properly. So that's the meaning of seeing Brahman. It doesn't mean, oh, the all-pervading stuff. That means, the point is it's that situation. But within that situation, you can see things, right? Let us say, you know, one is outside. It's very, very hot. And you go into, you know about a place that's cool. It's not hot. And you're trying to, you know, and you're making your endeavor to get there. When you get there, then you go inside, you sit down, you know, you might stretch out, you know, enjoy the cool ambience. So all you're worried about is the coolness of the place. That's all you're thinking about. But that's just one of the aspects of the place. It's just the situation, that coolness. But once you cool down and you're not feeling hot and sweaty anymore, then you'll start to notice the things around the room, what's going on, who's doing what, is there something to eat, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is that because the impersonalist is so worried about getting out of the material world, getting liberation, that in that process, they're completely ignoring that the spiritual realm has variety. They're just worried, no, I want to get out of the material world. And because in the material world there's variety, it gives me trouble. Therefore, spiritual world can't have variety. Because they're not looking for the variety. They're looking for simply being freed from the difficulty of being in the material world. Right? So that's the point, is when you give up this false ego, and that includes this false ego that goes along with how their concept of the soul, because their concept of the soul as Brahman and therefore is the supreme Brahman, that's also an upadhi. That's also an illusion. That's a false ego, right? Little dinky, and then they're really big. You know, it's false ego that goes on. Like you see it sometimes. You have this little chihuahua dog, right? Little dinky thing, this big, right? And then you have this big monster dog, you know, some St. Bernard or some other thing like that. And these chihuahuas going nuts, barking and freaking out and everything like that, you know. And the big dog's just kind of looking at it. They're like, what's this? You know, it's like this bite size, right? The dog could easily put that chihuahua in its mouth. But it's bewildering. What's going on here? This little dingy thing is making such a scene. You know? So it's false ego. Right? They think they're as big as a dog. They can take care. They can do, you know, like this. So the living entity, he's thinking, I am God. And so that is false ego. You can say, oh no, you've stripped away the secondary aspects of false ego, meaning a specific mundane identity within this 8,400,000 species of life and within a particular section in the 14 planetary systems. But the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, which is the root of false ego, that still remains. So you only actually understand Brahman when you understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ourselves as his eternal part, parcel, and servant. But then you see Brahman. Otherwise, the others, they get a glimpse, but they're not actually seeing Brahman. Otherwise, why are they so worried about prestige and this and that? That means that those things are very important. The cloud. Yes.
Maharaj, this upadhi point you mentioned, that Maya, this claim about the upadhi, so they also claim that when we say we are servant of Krishna or devotee of Krishna, that is also an upadhi. So why are you holding to that upadhi?
No, but why, if you're dealing with what something is, how is that an upadhi? If I say that this is a computer mouse, how is that an upadhi? That's what it is. If I say this is a pineapple, that's an upadhi. Right?
Yes.
You have to know what upadi is. They just take it that you're dealing with anything with form, and that is an upadi. So their definition of an upadi is wrong. So what can we do? They can say whatever they like. What do we care? Right? You know, Krishna says in the Gita about how the living entities is eternal part, parcel, and servant. That's Bhagavad Gita. They don't accept it. What can we do? Because their point is this, Vyasadeva is correct in as much as he supports their philosophy. So how are they actually jnanis? How are they actually searching for the absolute truth? How do they actually accept authority? Because, you know, Vyasadeva said it. He says it in Vedanta Sutra. He said, they say he's wrong. So if he's wrong, then why are you taking what he says? Right? You know, you can say is, oh, no, but, you know, we're taking what's important from there. But then just say, no, our philosophy is the basis. It's the authority. It's the standard. Not Vyas, not Vedanta Sutra, not Upanishads. Right? So what we say, that's the truth. That's all. But then that goes against the Vedic authority, in which it has to be based on scripture. So that's the difficulty, that they're not accepting the verses of the scripture that say something that's different than what they say. They'll work with all the verses, but they'll then reinterpret it. So they won't take the direct meaning if it doesn't support what they're saying. If it supports, then they'll take it. So are they actually that inquisitive, or do they have a motive? And if they have a motive, then why are they making comments?
Yes, Maharaj.
Because that's the whole thing. If you're dealing with the material mind, it's made out of material elements, the material intelligence. So the only spiritual is different from that. So it has to be opposite. So different means this has form and shape and that. That doesn't. This has activities. That doesn't. That's as far as they're doing. But that's, they're using the material logic on something spiritual. How is that logical? Right?
Correct, man.
Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, this mouse here. Then, you know, it has something it stands on. It has a little thing here where it, you know, checks what's it doing. You know, you can grab it. You can push buttons. You know, so then, you know, it's you know, it works okay. Yeah, like that. But now, you know, let us take this here. But, you know, okay, I mean, I guess you could put this, if you curled this over like that, and this over, then we could get a little bit of a stand, but then it doesn't have the thing under it like that, you know, it shakes like that. So, you know, I'm judging whether these lozenges are any good. And but they, you know, it doesn't click, you know, and it crinkles, you know, like that, but it's not as good as the click, you know, it's like that. So these are not good lozenges. Why? Because they don't come up to the standard of my mouse. Using my mouse as an authority of what is the standard, this is not a good, this is not good lozenges. Right? You know, it's nice and hard, it's shiny. Now this also, this is not a good chatter. It's not shiny, it's too big, it's floppy, you know? So it's not a good chatter. So we're supposed to accept that that is logical, that's intelligent. Right?
No, Maharaj, no.
Yeah, so they have a motive, and so then they're going to say that, you know, this is the way it is. So they're going to interpret everything there. We're just taking what the Shastra says. That's the thing. Because everybody gives their own spin on things, then it's said that we're putting a spin on things. But we're not putting a spin on things. We're just saying it as it is. that makes sense.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
The cloud produced from the power of the sun is not destroyed by the power of the eye, but by the power of the sun, right? So we're thinking, no, by my intelligence, I'll remove this cloud. No, you won't. Ahamkara flees or is destroyed by inquiry about Paramatma, by his mercy, right? So we inquire about the Supreme, and then by his mercy, then the cloud is removed. This shows that Ahamkara is not destroyed just by knowledge gained by a person. Vivartavad does not accept this point. Because their thing is, no, I can do it. But if you can do it, why are you here in the first place? If you say it's your pastime, then that's really a lame, what do you call it? A conclusion, because the material world is a place of misery. Perfection is getting out of it. Why would you come here to be miserable and then have to work so hard to get out of it? And you call that a pastime. So if that's the way it is, and it's so perfect, so then you get the Maya body, you toss him into a well, you know? And then, you know, and when he asks, why are you doing this to me? He said, oh, no, but this is your pastime. You know, you're walking around free on the land and all that. It gets boring now. Throw you into the well. Now that whole effort and energy and anxiety you go through to get out of the well, then, you know, getting out of the well, you'll feel so happy. So you'll thank me later. Like that. Maybe now you don't understand due to illusion, but you know, with time, when you get out of the well, you'll understand. So why would it be pastime? They only take pastime because God does in his pastime, so they want to do those pastimes. But what happened to God? Ishwara is controlled by goodness, so therefore it's material, and you're trying to get rid of the material world. Is if attachment is a problem, then why is it that attachment to what God does is not a problem? Attachment to other things is a problem. Why is it this is not a problem? So they're not logical. They may use the technique of logic, but they're not logical. Does that make sense? Just because I light things on fire doesn't mean I'm cooking. Right? Ahankara is here at Upadi on the jiva and does not refer to the ahankara arising from the jiva's root. Right? So the jiva's identity that's there with his, how you say it? Who he is and all that in the spiritual world, that's not what it's talking about. Because there, you're actually functioning on the absolute platform. But yoga maya is there to some degree, so because for the relationship with the Lord to develop and increase, there has to be that you're not looking at all the aspects of the like that. What aspects attract you? You're focusing on those and interacting based on that. That makes sense. Commentary by Srila Bhakti Prabhupada. Here the word tata means from the two previously described illusions. Muktihi means the individual souls attain freedom. And vivekena means by understanding the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual soul. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.12 said, if a person knows the true nature of the soul, and if he thinks, I am spirit, then what will he desire in this material world? How will he become attached to his material body? Right? So if you know actually who the soul is, and you understand that you identify as spirit, not as the body, then how will there be any desire? How will there be any attachment? Because we're a servant of Krishna. There won't be anything here. So you can use what's here, but it doesn't mean, you know, Does that make sense? It works. You know, such like say you're walking along and somehow there's some mud and your shoe gets stuck in the mud, right? You know, in a big pile of mud. So you're on the part where now it's not muddy. So you know, the correct thing is you just pick up your shoe and put it on, right? But because now you're standing in a proper place and the shoe is in the mud at a little bit of a distance, you might use a stick to get the shoe out of the mud, right? But it's not that the stick is important any more than it helps in getting the shoe out of the mud. It's not like you're going to take the stick home now and it's going to be a member of the family, right? Is that the stick is valuable in as much as it can help you get that shoe out of the mud. What's its purpose? So therefore, us is our purpose, what we can do to be serving Krishna, then we use whatever. So if we use this body and that, but we don't have to identify it to use it. Right? You have to identify with the car to drive the car. You have to identify with the potato peeler to peel the potatoes. I am the potato peeler. You know, like that. Is that how it works? Yes? No? No. So that's the point, is this idea that no, you can't do it any other way. That's what, because that's how we function. But the soul at any point can follow the discrimination of just surrendering to the Lord and then act on that platform. And acting on that platform, then how will he be attached? In the Mundaka Upanishad 229, it said, thus, the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. The wise transcendentalists, right, so the misgivings are, we have, it's not a doubt. Doubt just means I don't understand. You know, this and this, you know, how does that work? What's what? Misgiving is, even you technically understand what they're saying, you don't want to accept it. Right? So I think I'm the body, you know, and you said, no, you're not the body, you're the soul. Oh, okay. But how are we, you know, we're moving this, that? Okay, that's there. But if we say, you know, we're the sole servant of God, but no, we're not the servant of anybody. We're independent. So you can't accept that because it's a misgiving. So that's the difficulty, is that most of the time what you're dealing with, and people have arguments and all that, is misgivings. Sometimes there may be a doubt, but much of the time it's misgivings. If emotions are involved, then you can't have misgivings. The wise transcendentalists are described in these words of Bhagavad Gita 4:33 and 39. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of material possessions. O son of Prita, after all, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. Right, so by performing the activity, you know, but it says sacrifice without attachment, that culminates in knowledge. So therefore, the engaging the knowledge in the Lord's service, then that would be the best. Right? So, therefore, in knowledge, that's why Krishna says, perform your duties without attachment, in knowledge, with bhakti. So you're performing your duty, that means you're acting according to your nature. So one has to act according to its nature. You can try to act not according to your nature, it won't work. You may think, yeah, I'm doing great at this and all that. Oh, try to keep it up, see if it's sustainable. No, it won't be. But in doing your work, it has to be obligatory work, because that's in the mode of goodness, right? So therefore, you're doing that obligatory work without attachment, right? So that would be the proper thing. So I have my work that I'm qualified for, and I'm detached in the performance of the activity. But then there should be knowledge. You have knowledge of who you are, what the material world is. Then that becomes better. Right? And then you act on that platform. And so therefore that becomes your basis. But then when that's being done because it pleases Krishna, Now it becomes complete, now it becomes part. Otherwise, then you know you may have karma yoga, jnana yoga, but not necessarily on the devotional platform. Or it's on the devotional platform and maybe mixed. So one wants to go beyond all these things and come to the platform of pure devotion. In Bhagavad Gita 15.6, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, that abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by electricity. One who reaches it never returns to this material world. Right? So sun, moon, or electricity. So that means the concept of electricity has been around for a long time. But it's kind of like, well, if you have jeweled lamps, to light your place, then why do you need that? Why would you really need that? So it's always been there. It's just that they don't use it. Now the author of the sutras will reveal the way the soul can be free from these illusions. We're down here. Thought we went to the next page, but we didn't turn the page. Just starting again. And the fun part is how nicely it all connects together. A faithful man who is absorbed. A faithful man who is absorbed in transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. In the Bhagavad Gita 16:16 and 16:21, the Lord also declares, thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, one becomes too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and falls down. There are three gates leading to this hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. That lust, anger, and greed means that you have that material desire, and then you want it more and more. There's no end to it, to the greed. And then not being able to get it, then you become angry. So this cycle will always be going around and around and around in circles. And so that is what's going to keep us here. So strongly attached. So therefore, then, the lighter it is, the easier it is to perform unattached work. And as you perform unattached work, then you're able to get closer and closer to understanding the nature of the soul, right? And so then, as they, coming in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, then they hear about the proper process, then accepting that process and practicing that process, then they're able to gradually purify themselves, uncover this false ego. Take away discovering the false ego until they see their actual nature as servant of the Lord. So nothing stops. Right? It means the activity doesn't stop, because you see, action is what connects things. So therefore, the Lord and his energies are connected through action. Yes, someone had something.
Maharaj, this point of no sun, moon, and electricity, they use it for saying that there is no activity there in spiritual world, only eternal bliss is there. So there is no existence like here in this material world we see, because there is no sun, no electricity, only eternal existence and bliss one aspect.
So, but why is it eternal existence and bliss? That's a duality. Choose one. Why are you a dualist?
That eternity itself is blissness.
How is it? That's two different qualities. That means then you're having qualities on things, and it's qualityless, so it's just nothing. Why are you attributing bliss to it? Because that's a quality. And you said there are no qualities. Therefore, this is bogus, saying that it is bliss. You projected that will be bliss. Just like you say, yes, if I go on vacation to this place, I will be blissful. But when you get there, then, there's mosquitoes, it's hot, there's too many tourists and all that. the room that you booked that looked really fabulous and all that, but when you actually get there, it's way smaller than you think. That view that had there was actually just a painting on the wall. It wasn't actually there because there's not even a, there's no even window on that side of the room, you know? And so, you know, this is the reality. So you think it's going to be bliss. How do you know it's bliss? Because the point is, if it's bliss, who's going to tell you it's bliss? Because anybody who's absorbed in it, they can't talk. They don't exist. If you don't exist, there's no individuality to express anything. So then why is it you're saying that this absorption in Brahman is bliss?
Correct.
Yes? No?
Correct, Maharaj. That's where they get stuck and they don't have answers.
Yes, so then that's the whole point, and then stick to that, those points. See, is that they just say whatever they want and expect and hope that you won't notice.
Yes, Maharaj, that's how they work.
Yeah, so that's because the common person doesn't notice. Like if you go up to one of these, you know, so-called, you know, gurus and all that, that are, you know, speaking and impressing people and all that, and you actually talk about what they're doing mechanically and how they're, you know, getting the results, that you know, they'll go, oh, you know, you understand. But, you know, this is what people want. This is what I'm doing. You know, got to pay the bills. You know, they might even offer you a spot within their organization. So the whole thing is that it's just, they just say these things and they work. So thousands of years of sitting around and speculating, with time they find what works, you know, just like that. Any of the, you know, world religions that are there, with time they figure out what things they can say basically work. That's all. It's not that it's... So all it is that they're just removing time. See, is that you have existence and you have bliss. They're connected by time, by action. So they want to get rid of, they want to keep existence, but get rid of anything that does exist. And but they want the bliss, but the connection between the bliss and the situation is action, and they want to give up the action. How will they get bliss?
Correct, man.
Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, may I ask you?
Yes.
Guru Maharaj, the question is about world religions. The scientists, they said that in the world religions, we have two ideas of purpose of material world. One of the creationism, that world was created by God. And second is the theory of emanation, that world, it's like a Brahmavada, that it was that God emanated himself in this world, and this world is he. And they said about purpose, they first in first concept that God created this world because he wanted that someone worship him. And in second theory, they said that God emanated himself in this world because he wanted to feel bliss of self-cognition, because for him bliss is self-cognition. So can we say that these two theories, they based on karma and jnana, because they understand bliss as a karma, that someone should worship me, or I want to understand myself, I want to know myself by knowledge and worshiping, or it's something else?
Means you would have that, you definitely would have that aspect of the karma and yon, because that's going to be what translates to here. That is going to be attractive, because then it's worship, because then they worship God. Why? What's the whole point in worshiping God for such, for persons who have that belief, right? The purpose is that they'll get benefit from that. I worship God. I acknowledge God's position. I worship God. Therefore, I get benefit. Right, I'll get facility here. My son will pass the exams. You know, my, you know, does that make sense? You know, like that, you know, how you say we'll get a raise, we'll get more money, or people will stop bothering us, you know, stuff like that. And then, or, you know, in next life, then we'll go to heaven, we'll enjoy like that, and something. So by worshiping, they're there. So that's looking at it from that point of karma, right? And then the Lord, and so, but at the same time as the higher principles, he's given it so that people come back to the natural worship that they are. You would naturally be doing in relationship with the Lord. So that's actually the purpose. But it's not that it's just it's ritualistic worship. It's a matter of that surrender to the Lord. The worship is good, but if you have it surrendered, then that worship is going to be material. It's going to be for the purpose of karma. But if you surrender to the Lord for the Lord's satisfaction, then that surrender, that's in devotion. So religion should be cultivating that. And saying that's an emanation for me, then, you know, that aspect is there, is that Krishna, everything is God. So how can it not be an emanation from him? But at the same time, is it's emanating from him, that means he exists without manifesting creation. So it's not that by manifesting the creation, then he can know himself. No, he already knows himself. This is the material world's expanded as an emanation from him so that the living entities can come back to their natural position of surrendering to the Lord. So they're not two opposing views, but on the material platform, then they'll be opposing views. Right? Because in the material platform, you don't have the Achinti Shakti to put them together. You can't reconcile, so you always get duality. Like in the previous discussion, that about the impersonalists, that they're dualists, that they can talk all day until they're blue in the face that they're monists, but they're not. They're dualists at best, you know, because they'll have a few more things that they throw in, you know, because they see illusion separate from this, that it's not all, if they say everything's Brahman, means the illusion is also coming. It's the Shakti of Brahman. They don't accept the Shakti, that means, and it's separate. So that means it's another entity other than Brahman. So therefore, then what, and they say it's illusion, it's not okay. If it's all based on illusion, why are you talking? You don't exist, nothing exists. Be quiet, go sit in a cave somewhere and stop bothering them. Right? Because if their whole philosophy is based on illusion, that means anything they base on is also illusion. Right? If I take some red cloth and I make a shirt, the shirt's going to be made out of red cloth. So their whole philosophy is based on the illusory nature of this world, but if it's illusion, it doesn't exist. That means their whole philosophy doesn't exist. Right? So the difficulty comes up is they can't see because without devotion, it's only on the spiritual platform all these can be reconciled, because if everything is coming from the Lord, there's the Lord and everything's emanating from the Lord, all these opposing things, they're all reconciled in the Lord. So we're trying to connect this with this and that with this, and they don't, because they're different energies. But if you understand the principle of how they're coming from the Lord and what service they're doing in connection with the Lord, then there's no duality. So it says, you know, you say there's two systems. We'll say, no, it's just one. It's different features of one thing. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, so, you know, like you have this mouth. It's one thing. Oh, no, but it's actually two things. See, there's this top thing, this shiny thing here. And then there's the bottom part here that's a matte color and all that. So it's two completely different things that have nothing to do with each other. Would that be a proper understanding? Right? And then there's the things, oh, there's these little black lines down here on the bottom, like that. You know, so then you have the, you know, like the skids or something like that. So then you have the skid bodies, you have the matte bodies, you have the shiny bodies. And then you're going to have the guy here, you know, with the, you know, bite out of the apple bodies. You know, and then there's going to be, of those, there's going to be two points. There's going to be the white apple bodies, and then there's going to be the black apple bodies. Right? You know, like that. So you're going to go on. It's going to have, and you have all these different philosophies. It's just one thing. So Krishna is one, and he has unlimited features, you know, through his energies and that. But because they're looking at a material intelligence, they're seeing them all separately. So they can't see how they all connect together, how they're all connected to the Lord. So for us, those two different things that are opposed to each other, they're one thing. You're going to engage yourself in the Lord's service with knowledge. But the point is everything has to come from God. Otherwise, if it doesn't, then what's the basis? How is he sovereign if it doesn't come from him? If the material world doesn't come from him, where did it come from? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what do you call it? Abraham's father was...
In Abrahamic tradition, they usually have idea creation from nothing. Creation from
nothing. Yeah, nothing. But where did even if it comes from nothing, where did nothing come from? Because I can define nothing. So where did nothing come from? Nothing comes from God. Right? So it's an easy way of doing it for them. But the point is it all comes from God. Because there's ether from space. That's where everything is situated. So the point is it has to have emanated from somewhere. So to say is, if it doesn't come from God, then where did it come from? Because if God is the source of everything, that means he's also the source of nothing. Right? Now we'll say it's coming from his energies. But even if you want to say it's coming from nothing, that nothing is an energy of Krishna, so it has to be there. Because you can't have means that there's nothing in a space that's power, that's potency. Right? Why is there a space that something could be in? Right? You can't expand something through nothing. You have to expand something through space.
Maharaj, can I ask? Okay.
Someone speaking? Or?
Yeah, I thought, can I ask related to that? They're still having something.
So?
What I thought to ask, are these mundane religions able to, like, how would I say, change the practices, karma, or any good work? Is it change the karma or the destiny? They were not practicers, but I had few friends who were, they were like the heroes of when the Estonia sink down. So the other was helicopter pilot, the other was a unit chief. They both died, which seems to be nothing to do with good life or anything like that. But I mean, it kind of raised the question, where goes the limit where the destiny and karma will be changed, even if it's a mundane religion?
No, the point is what you have from the past, that's not going to change. It's what you have in the future. It's just like, let's say I go to work this week. And at the end of the week, I get paid for this week's work. Now, over the on Monday, I'm using the money from last week to pay for this week. I'm eating this week because of the results of last week's work. You can say it's no, because you're working today. That's why you're eating today. No. What I'm working today, that's going to be what I eat next week. Right? So this idea is that I do work and it will cancel. No, it'll create good work. I cook something that's not nice, so then I cook something that is nice. It's not that because I cook something that's nice, the not nice goes away. It's action and reaction. You do a work, it gets you a result. The result is there. The result becomes part of the field. Whenever you get a result, now you're a result in your field. I make an endeavor. I go out. I buy a chair. So then I have a chair in my place. Right? I didn't make the effort. I wouldn't have a chair. Right? So action and reaction, they go together and it becomes part of the situation. So they're in their situation and they may do good work and all that, but who knows what work they were doing previously that gives them all the trouble now. And then from good work this life, the next life, they'll have a better situation.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And then Ananda Vrindavan, is it was finished or no?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you.
In Bhagavad Gita 7:16, the Lord also declares, "Oh, best among the Bharatas, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the destroyer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute truth." But, yeah. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1:8:25, Queen Kuti tells Lord Krishna, "I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means we will no longer see repeated births and deaths." We're actually showing how you get out. Is that inquiring about the Supreme, surrendering to the Supreme, taking up the devotional service to the Supreme? That's good. In the Narada Pancharatra, second night, second chapter, it is said, "By associating with the devotees of Sri Krishna, one attains unwavering, unmotivated, blissful devotional service that eventually allows one to serve Lord Krishna directly. As a tender new sprout on vines or trees grows with the rains and withers with the scorching sunshine, so a new sprout on the tree of devotional service grows by conversing with devotees and withers by conversing with non-devotees." Yeah, so one is nourishing and one is not so nourishing. So then you see here, as he's saying, associate with devotees, give up the association with devotees. In Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth." Right, so now we, you know, association devotees of that, then the spiritual master, as you see, you have Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Majjhana Kriya, right? Bhagavad Gita 7:3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, "One out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows the truth." Right, so that's the kind of birth you're looking for, I mean, person. In Bhagavad Gita 7:19, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, "After many births and deaths, he was actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all the causes and all that is." Such a great soul is very rare, right? So means with knowledge, he surrenders, right? So in knowledge, he's surrendering. So it's not just a sentiment. And he knows him to be the cause of all causes. So it means whatever is there in the creation comes from the Lord. Right? So you're seeing is that these are just standard things that are there in the religion. It's just that they're not focused on because the central point is not pure devotional service. And so because of that, that relationship, eternal position of the soul and the Lord, that relationship is not seen. So people think they're the body. Right? That's why there's so much fighting, because you have all these different religions, they think they're the body. Otherwise, why do you have to bury the body? Because in that body, self-same body, you're going to go to heaven. Like, who wants to go in that body? Especially after it's been in the ground for a while, right? I'm sure if you go to, you know, any of the nice religious person cemetery and dug everybody up, I'm not sure if you'd want to look like that in the spiritual world. Like that, you know, I mean, okay, if you're going kind of with your idea of what's beyond is kind of like the perspective of Coco, then okay, then it'll work. But if you're having this thing of everybody's very nice and beautiful and all that, then you might want to consider is that the soul goes there. Right? We see bodies here, you know, the living entity is there, the body is there, the body grows. So the body is connected because the soul is there. So therefore, then they'll go to the heavenly planet. Where the soul is, there'll be another body. So like that, you can have these ideas, but then they'll always be kind of short of answering proper questions and answering what's there. Sutra 29. So you see is how he's gone, you understand the difference between that, understand about, what do you call it? You know, understanding the soul, not the body, of that then, you know, karma is there, obligatory work higher than that is knowledge. Then of that knowledge, then you go beyond the material modes of nature, right? That, how do you do that? You associate devotees. Of devotees, then you surrender the spiritual master. And someone who does that, that's very rare. That's special. That's what it's for. Does that make sense? Sutra 29. The material senses can perceive the material world, but they cannot perceive the spiritual world in the same way. The world is beyond their ability to know. For that world is beyond their ability to know. Right? They can't know otherwise. Right? Because the senses can only perceive what's within their realm. Just like a thermometer can only perceive heat. You can't tell what color something is, you know, or what it tastes like. Does that make sense? So it can't tell those things. Food routine. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates on this topic in Anucheta 85 as follows. The following is the view of one group. The Supreme Lord has two Shakti, Srup Shakti and Maya Shakti. The Srup Shakti reveals the powers of the Lord. The Maya Shakti shows the creation of the universe to the Jivas, bewildered by his illusory powers. Because of this Maya, a single person endowed with various kinds of knowledge performs action in the world. Since in this philosophy, an object universe is revealed by a real agent, the Lord, through a real seer, Shiva, by a real Shakti, Maya Shakti. Let that be. Right? So the Advaitins can't perceive of this because they say, no, they can't have all this. So because they can't understand spiritual, they don't understand spiritual means it has varieties. Here, everything's separate and all that. But there, the point is, it's all connected to Krishna. And so, therefore, then you have the variety that's there. So then they'll see it's that, no, there's that the material nature of the Jivas, the world of the Lord, the Brahman, it's all separate things. We're saying, no, they're all the same, and different features of the same thing. You know, one is energy, one is energetic, and within the energy, then there's varieties. So he says, let that be. Satyam na satyam shri krishna padab 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 jam podam antara jagat satyam asatyam va koyam tasmi durga durga graha. Why waste time speculating whether the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet is real or unreal, whether the universe is real or unreal? Right, so he's saying is that one may say this, one says it's real, one says it's not. What's the point? One should understand the truth of a real world as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.6.3. Translation. It may be proposed or 36. Did I say 33? 36. The baby proposed that this world is permanently real because it is generated from the permanent reality. But such an argument is a subject for logical refutation. Sometimes, indeed, the apparent non-difference of a cause and its effect fails to prove true. And at other times, the product of something real is illusory. Furthermore, this world cannot be permanently real, for it partakes of the natures of not only the absolute reality, but also the illusions disguising that reality. Actually, the visible forms of this world are just an imaginary arrangement resorted to by a succession of ignorant persons in order to facilitate their material affairs. With their various meanings and implications, the learned words of your Veda bewilder all persons whose minds have been dulled by hearing the incantations of sacrificial rituals. And so, being absorbed in the sacrificial rituals, they can't understand the other. That's why it'll be, you're saying that people are looking at it logically, but they'll see is that there's two different theories in these world religions. Because if someone's so absorbed in karma, they can't actually understand the other aspects that are there. So then that's going to be, but at the same time, those who are getting to the one can't see the purpose of the rituals and everything else. So only when you see from the transcendental platform, you can see. That's why you start with Krishna. We don't argue if the world's real or not. Krishna's there, how it's come from him. By accepting Sridhar Swami's commentary, right, one should understand the truth of the world, of a real world, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.36, by accepting Sridhar Swami's commentary. Since he concludes that non-difference exists in this world, some conclude that he also infers non-difference of Vaikuntha and other objects, no variety of one. We can confirm the qualities of an object capable of worldly perception by example of other objects proved by perception. However, that is not subject to worldly perception. What is not subject to worldly perception can only be understood by persons who know scriptures, and this cannot be changed at any time. In establishing that the Jiva and the Lord are non-different, the non-difference means they both have conscious forms. So you have to understand how you're defining things, because you're saying they're real, right? So they're non-different, that they're all real, but they're real because they're conscious. Right? Because the problem comes up when you're dealing with unconscious matter. And the conscious living entities identifying with that unconscious matter. That's where your problem comes up. The author further elaborates in Anucheda 90. This Maya, which cannot be understood by logic and which belongs to the Supreme Lord, but is not his root, is the cause of deprivation and ignorance for the jiva, who has the possibility of realizing the form, knowledge, bliss, and Lord. Right? So they want to know all these different things. So they're only interested in the existence. But the point is that existence, where is that coming from? Where does existence come from? It comes from the form. So form is the cause of existence. Right? Because of his knowledge, therefore, then there is all action. Because of his bliss, therefore others then are experiencing bliss. 379. That saha, by which creation takes place, is the Shakti called Maya, belonging to the Lord, Bhagavataha, who possesses inconceivable Swarup Shakti. This Maya, yat, is contrary to logic, nayena virudhyate. It is inconceivable. Right, so that's the thing is, okay, though the two Shaktis are both inconceivable, because the world is manifested by his Maya Shakti, not himself, because he is closely related with the Swarup Shakti, Antaranga, the Lord is not touched by the gunas of Maya in his activities of making the universe. So he's beyond. So then this Maya is contrary to logic. That means if you brought your intellectual processes in line with how everything is seen here. That means your so-called logic is illogical. And then based on your illogic, you're trying to then define what's actual logic. You define the spiritual, oh, that's illogical. That's because they're functioning from an illogical point of view. Right? Because the Lord is beyond these shaktis. He's the source of them. So the transformation of the shaktis they create, then he's not creating himself personally. He's doing so through his energies. You know, it's just like if the man gets something done through an assistant, then you can both say he did that, but at the same time you can say he didn't. So that's the position, is through his energies, he's simultaneously doing things, but at the same time he is a person who's not involved. Commentary by Srila Bhakti. Here someone may protest. Do not the scriptures say, Vaikuntanam tad adishtam drashtum te munayo gataha? Many sages have gone to see the spiritual world. Like as you're saying, they can't be seen. Many devarshis, brahmarshis, and other great souls have gone to the spiritual world, seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and returned to this world to describe what they have seen. Why have you spoken these mistaken words that will bewilder all to hear them? To refute this protest, the author of the sutra begins this passage, beginning with Sutra 29. Right, so, in that 29, the material senses can perceive the material world, but it cannot perceive the spiritual world in the same way. For that world is beyond their ability to know. So he's saying, no, but these sages went there, they knew, they came back and told us about it. That means the spiritual world is perceivable by the senses. Therefore, by my mundane logic, I can understand transcendence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual world cannot be perceived by the material senses in the same way the material world is perceived by them. This is so because the spiritual world is beyond the knowledge of the material senses. That is the meaning. The idea that the spiritual world can be seen by material senses is an idea created by the delusional energy of the Lord, right? This is the logic. In truth, the spiritual world is beyond the perception of the material senses. In the scriptures, what it said, the spiritual world of Vaikuntha is worshipped by all the worlds. No one returns from the spiritual world. This is described in Bhagavad Gita 15:6, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, one who reaches my abode never returns to this material world, because why would anybody come back? Right? You know, you have even in some, they talk about going to heaven because they think that's the spiritual platform. But then after being there, you come back here again, because their idea is you enjoy here, you go there, it's like a vacation. But here, so going there, you'll have no interest in the material world. It's people have already, through knowledge, understood that the material world is not that worthwhile. They're the ones that seriously look at where the soul and not the body, and then give up the endeavors for perfection. Bhagavad-gita 8:16, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, one who attains my abode, O son of Kuti, never takes birth again. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 2:4:1, it is said, the descriptive power of speech fails in the realm of the absolute truth. And so words can't explain. It has to be, that's why you have to hear from the Panaparat. Because then the chit potency is there. That chit potency then going from one person to the next, then it can be understood. But you're using the appropriate words. So that means you're using the appropriate words in devotion. Therefore, then it has an effect. It is also said the spiritual world is made of pure goodness. Their every desire is at once fulfilled. It is also said the spiritual world of Vaikuntha is worshipped by all the worlds. In the Narada Pancharatra, Lord Sadashiva explains, the eternal spiritual world of Goloka is situated in the spiritual sky. The Bhagavatam 2:9, 9-11. following description of Brahma's vision of Vaikuntha is given. The personality of Godhead, being thus very satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. Right? So that's how the point is these sages have seen or gone that what Krishna reveals. That's how they're not seeing with the material senses. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence and goodness. Because here, passion and ignorance prevail, and at the same time, even goodness, they have an effect on goodness. So in the spiritual world, there's no passion and ignorance, so therefore goodness is pure. There is no predominance of the influence of time. So what to speak of the illusory external energy? So time is the action, you know, that's there. It doesn't predominate in the material, in spiritual, because it's connecting the jivas with trying to enjoy the material energy. And you have past and future. So in the spiritual world, it's only there is movement that is in service to the Lord. And so it's transcendental. It doesn't have the temporary effect. So what to speak of the illusory external energy, right? So that's not going to be, there's no illusion. It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and demons worship the Lord as devotees. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planet is described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. The dress is of yellowish color. And their bodily features are very attractive. They are just the age of growing youth. They all have four hands, and they are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. Right? So this is revealed by the Lord. Right? The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.2, the demigod Brahma, now free from illusion, speaks the following prayer. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I understand the happiness and experience of yourself? So, I appreciate the form, so how are you going to understand the happiness? Because all that's connected together, because with the form, you perform the activities and give you that happiness. In the Mundaka Upanishad 229, it is said, the self-realized souls know that the spiritual world is effulgent, pure, glorious, and never touched by magic. This is Upanishad. Right? So if they're self-realized, then that means that they're still individual. You say is they just merged in Brahman, but then the merger of the Brahman, they wouldn't be speaking. And if they say it's no, but they are Brahman, so as Brahman they're speaking, that means that Brahman can function through senses and everything else. So that's the difficulty. So they say, no, it's nothingness. But at the same time, if it's nothingness, then why is this guy talking? You say he's advanced, he's self-realized. Why is he talking? If he becomes Brahman and merged in that, then he would stop talking. Because you say Brahman has no quality, he doesn't talk. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.